Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 10, Episode 41, Dave. I can't remember exactly what you just told me. But the Steelers are now an under 500 football team for the first time in the 2016 season, as in a beautiful day at Heinz Field and a tremendously exciting game, dramatic game. The Steelers lost to the Dallas Cowboys 35-30 in a game that saw four touchdowns in the last 7 minutes of play or so, and raises all sorts of questions again about where the Steelers are. This week, it was the offense good, the defense bad. And Dave, it sounds like, you know, we're going to have a couple more injuries on the bottom side of the Steeler roster that may mix things up a little bit. But, seven games left in the season, you got to think the Steelers team really needs to go 6-1 to guarantee themselves a playoff spot and probably win the AFC North.
Yeah, you do. If you lose two more games, you're going to be 9-7, and is that going to be enough to win the AFC North? I don't know. You know, you got a Baltimore Ravens team that they have a decent defense, and they just hope that their offense can score 20-something points a week. I'm not really sure we know the identity of the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll get to see them Monday night against the New York Giants. And if you're a Steelers fan, you're a big Giants fan right now heading into this game. And as far as last night's game goes, part of me feels like we should start at the end and work backwards on this thing, but I'm not sure. That's just me thinking out loud. I'm not sure that's a correct process in digesting what happened Sunday.
Yeah, happy to do it that way. At least we'll get to most of the important stuff if we do it that way. There is so much to get to in this one, and let's just knock out the injury stuff. Stevie Johnson and Shamarco Thomas, and it doesn't sound like either of these injuries are short-term. Again, these guys got ruled out early in these games. Stevie Johnson on a special teams play with an ankle injury was on crutches. So he's not going to play this week. And, you know, just looking forward, remember, the Steelers have a short week next week against Indianapolis for a Thanksgiving game. So you can probably roll Stevie Johnson out for the two games. And I have to wonder now if Shamarco Thomas has this groin pull, Dave. And I'm trying to remember, the Hayward and Thomas injuries were both three-week injuries, right? They came back after the bye. So they missed two games and then came back after the bye. Well, you have to wonder if the Steelers have the patience to wait 3 weeks to a month I'm going to assume Shamarco re-injured the same groin, but it's obviously possible it could be the other one. If you think it's 3 weeks or a month, you just have to wonder his role as a special teams player who actually got on the field yesterday for a couple plays. You have to wonder not just if his season's over, and maybe his Steelers career is over if they decide to move him to the IR.
Yeah, you just made me look at my calendar. I thought maybe my 3 hour sleep turned into a 3 week sleep. We get the Browns next, so the Thanksgiving game is in 2 weeks.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They're going to miss this week.
Oh, okay, okay.
Short week, so they'll miss Indy as well.
Well, I tell you right now, Stevie Johnson's not coming back anytime soon. He broke his ankle, according to Mike Tomlin.
So he goes on IR, so he's done.
Right, that means I hope L.J. Fort didn't get too far away from town, because you would think that on Tuesday, Stevie's going to go to IR, L.J. Fort will come back to the 53. You mentioned with Thomas, it does seem like he missed two and a bye week, so you're probably looking at a minimum of two there with him. And so, you know, you got a guy like Bud Dupree potentially coming back soon, right? That might be your guy right there to IR to make room for Bud Dupree there. So Steve, say what you will about Steven Johnson. He came into this game leading the Steelers in special teams tackles. And correct me if I'm wrong, he was inactive for at least one game that I remember. on top of it. So this is a guy that they went out and they signed during the offseason for the, you know, for the primary reason to lead the team in special teams. So and he was doing just that, and now, you know, they'll have to replace him on special teams. I was surprised to see Shamarco Thomas on the field defensively there early on in the game. So
what do you think you got, Dave? Two snaps, two or three?
I tell you, David, the initial NFL snap counts appears to be messed up on this thing. You know, with their initial counts. In fact, the NFL doesn't have him on the field at all for any defensive snaps. And I you know, I know I saw him for at least one, right?
Yeah, I think I saw him for two. So
anyway,
obviously they're trying different things, and some of that's, you know, you want to bring pressure, you want to do some different things, which the Steelers did a lot of, and Shmarkum can fit some of those aspects maybe better than some other guys. So the rest of the interview stuff looks okay, and obviously D'Angelo, we find out yesterday, is going to be, he was scoped according to Tomlin. And it's much more week-to-week than long-term, so he doesn't seem to be a candidate for the IR. That's a positive. So maybe he comes back this week, or maybe he's back for Indy. And, you know, we don't know much more about DHB and Marcus Wheaton. We'll kind of see how that plays out. And, again, watch what happens this week, because they really kind of, you would think, have to play this for 2 weeks, because it's hard to envision roster, you know, guys getting back, because there's not really going to be any practice for the Colts game. They play, you know, 1 o'clock Sunday. They'll have meetings Monday. They'll be off Tuesday next week. So they'll have a walkthrough Wednesday. That's it. So if not playing this week, you're not playing next week.
Yeah, that's probably a good bet. And boy, Marcus Wheaton now with that shoulder showing up, after initially being full on Wednesday, he was limited on Thursday and then did not practice Friday and was ruled out. It's, you know, hate to say it, but it might be time to go ahead and put him underneath the knife. He's missed so much time already. You know, Mike Tomlin likes to talk about that train. Ben Roethlisberger earlier in the season, paid mention to the fact that, you know, the time that Marcus Wheaton has missed. He's missed so much time now, and if that shoulder is going to be, You get him for a game, you miss him for the next two games, you know, he's probably, maybe there's a chance he's played his last game in a Steelers uniform. And you got guys like Kobe Hamilton, who, boy, you know, when Kobe Hamilton was promoted from the practice squad, you thought, okay, this might be a week or two thing. Here we are a month later now, and he's getting the lion's share of the snaps. He got all but what, four or five, I think, against the Cowboys on Sunday, and Sammy Coates got two snaps for Sammy Coates, you know, in this game. And yeah, I realize, and keep in mind that Sammy played a lot of special teams in this game as well too. So either he's in the doghouse, or that finger's not, you know, healing the way they want it to, or what. But that was a little bit shocking with Darius Heyward-Bey down, that Kobe Hamilton got the lion's share of the snaps. And as far as DHB goes, I believe there was a report stating that on Sunday that DHB was still on crutches and still in a boot on the sideline.
Yeah, so he's not coming back. And again, you know, we'll see if there's needs on the roster. Doesn't seem like anything's imminent. But, you know, we can get to the, you know, we'll figure out whether we need to get to the Sammy Coates stuff. That may be more of a Wednesday topic about what his role is in this team. But for a guy who had, I think the numbers I saw were, he had 20 catches for roughly 420 yards through week five of the Steelers season. And in the last four games, he has one catch for 4 yards.
Yeah, so he's at 20 catches now. So I think he had 19 during that first stint there, and one since, I think.
Needless to say, that's not what you're looking for. So
no.
All right. So, Dave, before we get into this mortgage process, sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger or Dak or Ezekiel or whatever it is you need to spell.
Elliot is the – I always forget the final T in Elliot.
Yeah, with a double L, double T on Zeke. Let Craig Oxane, our buddy, be your guide through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Dallas. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email them at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551. NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right, let's start from the back. 9 seconds left, 12 seconds left, whatever it was. Ezekiel Elliott goes 32 yards untouched for a touchdown. Dave, we see this in college and in pros all the time where teams have, fourth and one situations, and they'll stack the line of scrimmage across and have one or two guys kind of deep trying to plug holes based on how the snap and the line, the influence goes. And we know that if a guy beats the line of scrimmage on those types of plays, he may well go for a touchdown, and that's what happened, and that was the nail in the coffin. And remember, you go 32 yards with that little time left. Remember, that's a 49-yard field goal, and even though Bailey made one from 53 going that direction, 53 is not a given. 49 is not a given. In that situation, what a kind of deflating, back-breaking, unfortunate sequence of events.
Yeah, right up the gut. It really was embarrassing. I believe Ryan Shazier got buried on that play. I'm watching right now. Poor Lawrence Timmons just sitting down after that play on the field. And they blocked down inside to the right there, and there's just enough crease right there off of left guard, left tackle, and looks like Hargrave blocked down, Shazier blocked down, and of course Jarvis kicked out, and the middle of the field wide open with the safety splits there, and that's all she wrote.
So let's kind of start with the last Cowboy touchdown before that, and it's a game where the Steelers take a lead, and I'm trying to get all these sequence of events right. Dave, the Cowboys drive down, and it looks bad for the Steelers with 2 minutes to go. I think Mike Tomlin made a big mistake, and people know how I feel about his time management. You've got a situation there, and I'll while we're talking here, I'll pull up the sequence of plays so I can make sure I get the exact times right. But the Steelers had a significant amount of time where they could have called timeout before the two-minute warning and then used timeouts in front of the two-minute warning. The Cowboys, the ideal world, it didn't work out this way. The Cowboys kicked the field goal, and then the Steelers get the ball with 2 minutes left with no timeouts. And just so people have an understanding of where I'm coming from on this, my view has always been you can do a great deal to control the clock when you have the ball offensively. You can do nothing other than use timeouts to control the clock defensively. So in this situation with the Steelers not having the ball, I just felt like that's where they should have been using their timeouts. Obviously, it was pretty much moot because of how the plays went, but just so people have an understanding, Dallas got a 3rd and 8 with 2 minutes and 50 seconds left when they snapped the ball to Jason Witten. He gains 14 yards. Let's just say they placed the ball with 240. 235, because it'd have to be a little bit less. But the Steelers basically let 35 seconds run off without doing anything about it. Again, there are a lot of other things that became more significant in this game, so it's not a talking point in terms of necessarily the outcome, but it's the process, and I don't think the Steelers got it right. Anything to add to that, Dave?
Well, yeah, you want to use that 2 minute warning as a timeout in their downs.
And by not calling him out timeout, the Steelers didn't. They just let all that time run off.
Right, exactly. And of course, coming out of the 2 minute warning ended up being a moot point. At first, I thought, they just let.
and that's what I wanted to get to. So there was a big question in my timeline, in your timeline, and on the post game show. First down on the 14, and Zeke goes right over right guard, and basically goes untouched for a touchdown on that play. Do you think they let him score?
To hear Mike Tomlin talk, they didn't. Right?
And to hear Cam Hayward after the game, they didn't either. He mentioned both touchdowns as being very, he was not happy.
It sure looked like it was allowed to happen, that's the first thing that ran through my head, and immediately after it happened, I thought, okay, well, maybe that's not the worst case scenario there, but it was not planned that way. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so, you know, at some level, it does work out to the Steelers' advantage because the Cowboys score in a minute 13, and they were obviously in field goal range, and they go down and they get the touchdown, and they take the 29-24 lead. Whereas you feel like if Zeke had fallen down at the 1 yard line, and they, you know, the Steelers, you have to use a timeout there, and then, you know, they kneel again, the Steelers use another timeout, and if they wanted to, they could have knelt a third time, and they could have given the Steelers the ball with, you know, a minute left or inside a minute left, whatever. And, you know, these all the strategic things you think about. But they had a touchdown, and that obviously means the Steelers have to go and score a touchdown themselves, being down, you know, five. Obviously, the Cowboys don't get the two-point conversion, which I'm sure we'll get into that as well. And then the Steelers, Dave, they have a brilliant drive, just textbook drive down the field.
Yes, they did. And you started off kind of slow there with the pass to Antonio Brown, but then, you know, Green over the middle from Roethlisberger, and I think there was a big pass to Le'Veon Bell for 20-something yards there. And then Jesse James down the short right for another, you know, you back-to-back explosive plays. And then, you know, there you are. You're set up first and 10 inside the red zone, and we saw the Dan Marino play, and props to, I think Ben said after the game that Todd Haley was yelling in his ear not to waste the down, and Ben said the heck with it, gave Antonio Brown the high sign. Antonio got it, and they were essentially the only two offensive players that really moved on the play, and you know, you get a touchdown. I know the immediate reaction may have been, oh no, they scored too fast, but I have never been one, David, that says, oh no, they scored a touchdown too fast for the most part, because you got to take them when you can get them, you know, because anything can happen on any given play. Touchdowns are not guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination just because you get in the red zone. So I was feeling pretty decent with 43 seconds left, and the Steelers up, you know, forcing Dallas to come back down the field and at least get a field goal. I mean, it's better than being behind, obviously, but, evidently, as Ben Roethlisberger said after the game, scored too quick or left too much time, he said.
I mean, I don't even know what to say about the last drive. I mean, you look at it, and here's a point that I don't know will be discussed anywhere else but here, is, okay, the Cowboys get the ball with 42 seconds left and three timeouts. Three timeouts is incredibly significant. You know, had it been one or two, I think things could have turned out differently, even under the same sequence of events. But obviously they had three. They could use the middle of the field. Go back and watch the first play. The Steelers get good pressure on Dak, rolls to his right. He throws to Jason Witten at the numbers, and Jason Witten purposely does not catch the football. No question in my mind he could have made the catch. It's down at his shins. He realizes he's got a Steeler defender on him. And catching a football is going to take an extra 10 seconds to, you know, get tackled, get it spotted, and get a playoff for no gain. And instead, he lets it just fall at his feet. And you think about, you know, 10 seconds, how that might have made things different as the Cowboys were struggling. That was a huge play.
Does Antonio Brown catch that ball?
Hell yeah. He catches every ball he can catch. And so that's the first play. Of the drive, and then they get to Beasley for 10 yards, no big deal, and they call timeout. So, you know, that's, you give up 10 yards for a timeout there, I think you're in decent shape. And then they go to Witten for 13 yards, and, you know, this is where, you know, now they have some time issues. They get those 13 yards, and then they go to Witten again, and this is exactly what you're looking for, a five-yard game, keeping them in bounds, and you're thinking they're going to have to use their second timeout, which they did, and it ends up being all moot because of the face mask penalty. Well, but the Steelers were looking at a situation where Dallas has second down and five on the Steelers' 47, so outside of field goal range with only one timeout left, and 23 seconds, which to me, that's in the Steelers' favor. That's in the Steelers' favor.
Yeah, but they did. They went Witten on two plays in succession right there, and they called their second timeout. After that first one to him, and then the play. So in other words, the clock was stopped at 23 seconds, and then Dak hit Witten over there on the right side for another 5 yards, and then that's when the face mask penalty happened. If you don't face mask him right there, then they have to burn their third timeout with 15 seconds left at that point. But at the same time, they're at their what? They're at the Steelers 40-something, because
they're at the 47 at that play.
Right. At the Steelers 47 at that point. And then obviously, out of field goal range at that time. So and then they would have had to have burned their final timeout then. So then they would have they wouldn't have likely run the ball, right? on second and what would have been 5. So then they would have to pass the football and then hope to get another basically 15 yards from that point forward with 15 or 20, there would have been 15 seconds left, and then they would have been needing 15 yards in 15 seconds to get in field goal range. So that face mask penalty on Sean Davis was just brutal in more ways than one. And they knew they were in field goal range, so why not just run Elliott up the middle to give yourself, another 3 or 4 or 5 yards, because he'd been getting that all day. You still had your final timeout in your pocket that you didn't have to take, thanks to Sean Davis, the clock stopping with that penalty, and then he busted right up the gut. So that one penalty just really changed the whole complexion of that drive,
Yeah, absolutely, and it was a penalty, period. And I didn't see the play before, Dave, where people said William Gay had a face mask on Witten on the play before. I don't know if that's the case or not, but Cockrell got called for it at the stadium announcement, but it was on Sean Davis. And I don't know what to say. This is not a play where a guy goes in and it's held his face mask for 10 seconds, or he reached in to make the tackle and he got his face mask. I don't know. Can you guarantee in technique that'll never happen? No. It's just unfortunate, but and unfortunately was the right call.
Yeah, I mean you're trying to make a play. And your hand gets tied up in the face mask. I think he said that he tried to let it go, had his fingers in it and tried to let it go immediately, but it was too late there. I mean, you're trying to make the play. The kid was trying to make a play, and it was an accident. I mean, he didn't mean to do it, but it's just misfortune, unfortunate timing as to when it happened.
Okay, so that's the that's the game-winning drive, and that takes us through the last 2 minutes of the game. So let's kick back to the beginning of the game, Dave. And things started out relatively rosy for the Steelers in the first half. I thought they played reasonably well. They go into the half with the lead. They control time of possession in the first half. The talking point is clearly, the Steelers going for two on the second touchdown. All things considered, where they were in terms of third down conversions that they were converting, I think they held the Cowboys to 2 for 4. The Cowboys, the Cowboys had the big play, and we'll get to that. But it's a situation where I think, you went into the half knowing the Steelers get the ball to start the third quarter. And, I felt decent where the Steelers were at halftime.
Well, I wrote during the week, David, Steelers need to start fast starting Sunday against Cowboys. Remember, we talked about how not scoring in their first two possessions. They had done it only 3 times out of 16 possible possessions heading into the game against the Cowboys. Lo and behold, they must have read my post. 2 touchdowns in the first 2 drives. They did that. They got a turnover on a short field early as well. You know, I threw out that stat, I think, earlier in the week, saying the Steelers were 36-8 since 2004 when they scored a touchdown on their opening offensive possession. You really had to think, how the heck did Vegas know this? You know, because I think a lot of people were still a bit surprised that the Steelers entered this game as favorites. And here they are. You know, two touchdowns in their first two drives. Their defense held the Cowboys to 3 points on their first two possessions. In my opinion, that's probably best case scenario when it comes to that situation. You really had to like where they were at that point. They had done I don't want to say reasonably good job at containing Elliott, but up until that point, I think starting their third drive, he had his longest run was like 8 yards. Sure, he was getting 5-6 yards a carry, but the Steelers had been getting off, or in the case of that first drive, caused a turnover there. And they just couldn't, they gave up the not only an explosive play, but another quadruple explosive play on the pass to the right to Elliott. And 83 yards later, he's in the end zone. He had a missed tackle by, who was it? Golden or David?
Golden on the touchdown.
Yeah, Golden on the touchdown there. So I think another bad angle maybe by Mitchell on that play as well, too. Those kind of things kill you, man. You have a team backed up the way that you did. 2nd and 18. I mean, give him 10 yards. Give him 12 yards. Get him down on the ground. And to have him just go all the way up that right side, 83 yards. And then, 1 week after letting Mike Wallace, having the Ravens pinned back at their own 5 and letting him go 95 yards. Everything that you had done up until that point, I thought defensively was just by the wayside then, and even though the Steelers were still ahead, 12-10 at that point, you're thinking, my goodness, what did they go and do?
So let's talk about which side do you want to talk about, the kind of the offense or the defense in terms of what's going on? Because look, clearly, and I as you can imagine, I'm just getting blasted today for not being hard enough on Tom and being too hard on Ben.
I get that every week. Yeah, right.
So it's just the same stuff. So let me just say this about what happened yesterday. The defense lost the game. I mean, nobody's arguing the point that this was defensive mistakes. Ben had a good game, but here's a fact for you on Ben's season. Ben has played 8 games this year. He has had a passer rating below 79 4 times, and he has had a passer rating above 112 4 times. He hasn't had a game in between. And as you can imagine, this pretty much lines up with home and away, playing home and away. I mean, you think about that. He has not had an average game at quarterback. He's had subpar games, and he's had really good games. And in the games where he's been below 79, they're 1-3. They happened to win that game over the Bengals. And in the games where – and that was a home game. And the games where he's been above 112, they're 3-1. And they lost yesterday. So, I mean, the constant line that, they're wasting Ben's prime, like he's a non-actor in this, is – to me, it's just mind-blowing. Ben's had some bad games. The Steelers have lost those games. Ben's had some good games. The Steelers generally win those games. You look back at the playoff games before, Ben had 4 straight playoff games between 2010 and 2014 where he had a passer rating below 80, and the Steelers went 1-3 in those games. I mean, you can put stuff on however you like to put it, but let's make sure, we're looking at all the relevant information. And in this game yesterday, obviously it wasn't Ben's fault. It wasn't the offense's fault. Were they perfect? Of course not. But they put up 30 points. They're the first team this year to put up 24 points against the Cowboys. They did their job, and they scored a touchdown. Did a beautiful job taking the ball down the field. It was a great fake spike. Can you imagine being a Cowboy? Can you imagine being a Steelers fan if that were reversed and Dak Prescott faked a spike against one of the Steeler corners and they scored a touchdown? I mean, all hell would break loose about discussing that. But Cowboy Nation doesn't have to worry about that because they went down the field and got the winning touchdown, and they can kind of laugh about it and say, that stuff shouldn't happen. But this one's on the defense, no doubt. Just like last week, it was on the offense, no doubt.
I just think that I think when you go back and look and you're spot on as far as Ben's performances so far this season. But the thing is, I think every team in the NFL needs to be prepared for their even the great ones like the Patriots and boy, the Packers. Boy, we could have a whole podcast on similarities between the Packers and the Steelers this year, right? As far as that goes. But this isn't Packers Depot, so we won't. The thing is, I think you got to be prepared for a quarter of your games during the season to feature average to below average quarterback play. And you need your defense to be there to pick you up in those games. Now, with that said, you go back and in your mind, and you go back and you look at some of the wins the Steelers have had this year. Washington, we both admit that even though they held the Redskins to 16 points in that game, that Kirk Cousins played some good defense for the Steelers in that game, correct? Kirk Cousins played some good defense for the Steelers in that.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins was awful.
Okay, in that game against the Bengals, pretty much the same thing with Andy Dalton. Not to the degree I don't think that Kirk Cousins did, but Andy Dalton wasn't.
He was not good. It was bad weather, and he didn't play well.
And neither did Ben in that game as a whole. And thankfully, who knows what happens if that fumble's is overturned at the end, right? I mean, do any of us know how that thing plays out? No.
Yeah, the Steelers lose.
Okay, you said it, I didn't. The Kansas City Chiefs. That, in my opinion, was a byproduct of a foot on a throat early by the Steelers offense. Did the Steelers defense play a role and get that turnover early in that game and all? Yes, but when you get up on teams and you get that foot on that throat 20-something points in the first quarter, teams are usually scrambling the way the Steelers did against the Eagles to get out of their game plan and throw the football 50-something times. We all know the Chiefs really are not built to do that. The Jets are just horrible. the Dolphins giving up 30 points to the Dolphins is just inexcusable. Okay, you played decent against the Patriots, but we all know that if you're going to beat Tom Brady, you better only allow 18 or 19 points in total. I don't care who your quarterback is. The game against the Ravens, a winnable game on both sides of the football. But the Ravens offense, not striking fear into many people. And then you have the Cowboys game yesterday, Look, I'm not pardoning Ben Roethlisberger here by any stretch of the imagination because, as you said, he's either on or he's off this year. There is no happy medium Ben per se. And when we came into this game, David, you, I, all of our listeners, Mike Tomlin, the entire Steelers coaching staff knew what was coming from the Cowboys offense. It's going to be a heavy dose of Zeke Elliott. With a smattering of Dak Prescott, trying to convert some third downs to the likes of Cole Beasley, Dez Bryant, and Jason Witten. They did a decent job outside of one play, one explosive play maybe in the first half, but unfortunately football games include four quarters. And that defense just really, really wore down. There was one point in that game where I typed on Twitter, boy, the Steelers really need a long scoring drive here to give this defense a break. And I think they went three and out after that. And I thought, oh, man, oh, no. Because how would you like – you had Stephon Tuitt played every snap, I think, in this game. Cam Hayward played all but maybe four. How would you like to get leaned on by that offensive line for an entire game like that, and then get leaned on a little bit more with the game close, at the end there. They couldn't get stops when it mattered the most in the second half, and they just wore down to a nub. And the Cowboys do that to you. That's what their offense does. And Dak Prescott carved him up for over 300 yards. What play? I said on Twitter, I said circle this play. on Twitter. It was like a 3rd and 8 or 3rd and something. And they let Dak complete a pass to Dez Bryant to move the chains. I said to circle it, and I didn't circle it. And I thought, oh man, what a huge play that's going to probably end up being. You know, they just couldn't hold on in the 3rd and 4th quarter. There, you had the big explosive. You know, people want Keith Butler to blitz. They blitz. They leave Artie Burns out on the island. And he gets burned by a great pass by Dak to Dez Bryant for another double explosive play, 50-yard touchdown in that game. You know, the Steelers' defense knew what was coming, and they couldn't stop it.
They couldn't stop it. You know, this is look, the Steelers are in a position to win this game. I mean, it's looking at trying to find other factors involved special teams. Look, Chris Boswell made a mistake kicking a ball out of bounds. The Steelers gave up a relatively long punt return. The Steelers also got a good punt return from AB that put them in really good position, that set up the touchdown, one of their four touchdowns. Look, if you didn't have a rooting interest in this game was entertaining as hell. I mean, it went back and forth. It had it was a reasonably well played game if you like offense. There weren't a ton of turnovers. You know, we Steelers get the one early. As for the blitzing, Dave, I'm generally, I think, you know, people know where I stand on this, and we, you know, we changed our view based on the personnel and the team and what's going on. But I thought they did a good job of getting Dak Prescott under pressure and making him move in the pocket and hurrying throws. And I thought he did an excellent job of making good decisions. The Steelers didn't drop, you know, interceptions. Dak got the ball out. You know, he had the strip sack early. That was a key. But, you know, not a lot of, you know, not a lot of turnovers either way. The Steelers got a little bit lucky on a Le'Veon Bell fumble. It's both offenses played pretty well. And the Steelers did it with a shorthanded wide receiver core. The Dallas Cowboys did it without Jason Witten for 3 quarters. And then he became a huge factor toward the end of the game. As Dez, you know, didn't do much late in the game, but did a ton early in the game. Cole Beasley wasn't a big factor in this. He's been very good for them. So I like the Steelers got Dak under pressure, and I think they did a pretty good job. But what's happened now is in the last two weeks, the Steelers have given up touchdowns of 32 on the ground, 50 in the air, and, you know, 83 and 95 in the air. The difference here is the 50 was the first time they've gotten beat over the top, really almost all season, on a play. And, you know, we can look at it and say to Dez, push off or whatever. But again, you know, you're going to live by the sword. You're going to die by the sword a little bit. I prefer to see the Steelers play with pressure and some man coverage and understand that occasionally guys are going to get beat by good receivers than see them sit back and just get chewed to pieces like they did in Philadelphia and, you know, to some degree in Miami. I just think it's more entertaining and engaging football seeing Shazier get after it, and they sent Shazier a ton in this game. They brought him off the edge finally, you know, repeatedly. But you know, if you don't get home, what you hope happens is the basic thing: tackle the catch, don't allow the big play. Because even if you don't get home, hopefully he's got a beat less to get the ball off because he's going to get hammered. And Dave, you know what was going through my mind in that game is, as people were saying, you know, Tony Romo would be a much better quarterback for this team. I don't know that Tony Romo survives that game because he would have been, you know, he would have been meat sitting there in the pocket.
He sure wouldn't have had the mobility that Dak has for sure. And Dak made some key throws at some key times in this game. I mean, Hines Ward would say, take your hat off and hand it to him. But with that said, boy, Dez really schooled Artie a few times out there on the edge. You know, one of those times he gave kind of like a double move and then came back to the football, and Artie's like 8 yards behind him, you know? And that was a big conversion in the game. Did Dez get away with a push off early in the game? Absolutely, he did. You know, that was a blown call for sure on that one. But man, it just, you know, we talk about chunk plays and explosive plays, and they're bad enough when they're the 20-yard variety. They're You can anytime a team gets a double or a triple explosive play, I bet 9 times out of 10 you can bet that that drives ending up in 7 points somehow, some way, even if the explosive or the double or triple explosive play doesn't go for a touchdown there. So, you know, just not getting key stops on key, you know, get off downs, or in the case of the Elliott one, 2nd and 18, and you let that go for 83. I mean, for God's sakes, let him get 15 yards on it. Just get him down on the ground and live to defend the blades of grass another day. And, you know,
I'll tell you, I'm sure you felt the same way. You looked at that play, and when he hit the 50-yard line, it was, well, that's probably a touchdown.
Yeah.
Because they had blockers out front, you know, blockers. Great play call against the right defense. And they get out there, and people say, well, you know, Shazier didn't run them down. Shazier came from about 30 yards further away on an angle and at least made it a close play. Golden kind of was flat-footed, missed the tackle. And you know, as you pointed out, Mitchell came flat across. And, I don't know if Mitch just didn't have a great sense of Ezekiel Elliott's speed or what, but he came flat across and got picked off by a blocker and it was a non-factor in the play.
Yes, indeed. And look, I think what really killed me the most there with this defense was those final two drives. I mean, just, you know, they talk about trying to get Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt some help during the offseason, right? Talking about, and Cam Hayward saying at the end of the year how, you know, need some help there to relieve some of those snaps. Where's that help at? You know, where's the help at so those guys aren't getting worn down in the fourth quarter? How many teams around the NFL, David, really play and to examine this, you would have to consider defensive tackles on a 4-3 team, right? How many across the league, 3-4, 4-3 defenses do either defensive ends in a 3-4 or defensive tackles in a 4-3 play 95% of the snaps?
I'm guessing none. I mean, I don't know why Ricardo Matthews – I don't have the snap counts in front of me, Dave. I don't know why Ricardo Matthews didn't get a little more burn.
I don't think they – I mean, he's a bit undersized. I mean, as you like to say, he's just a guy, right? I mean, he only played – let's see here – 4 snaps. And of course, LT Walton was not active for this game. Daniel McCullers, I mean, you're not going to put him. I mean, Daniel McCullers actually played 13 snaps in this game. Javon Hargrave, 21. You knew that you're going to have to play a lot of base defense in this game. So it wasn't like you could, you know, you had to have a nose tackle on the field, you know, for at least half the snaps in this game because of what the Cowboys were using personnel wise. That wasn't a secret going in because the Cowboys like to line up 8 guys on that line of scrimmage. They play a lot of 2 wide receiver sets. You know, that's who they are. You know, LT Walton, as I said, wasn't active. That wasn't surprising that he was down for this game. Does this team need to draft another defensive end or go out and get a better an upgrade over a guy like Ricardo Matthews in order to get Hayward and or Tuitt off the field more snaps than what they're doing during games as part of a rotation? Because I think, like it or not, I think both those two just kind of wore down in the fourth quarter there.
I think that's absolutely fair. And you know, look, James Harrison wasn't on the field those last 2 drives. They had Jarvis Jones out there. It goes back to the conversation at the end of the season. You and I both liked what we saw. Again, it's preseason. I don't want to put too much on it. But from Ricardo Matthews, we saw Hargrave and McCullers in there. I mean, Hargrave was not a big I didn't think he was much of a factor in this game. And I don't think he's been really much. He's not as big. He hasn't been as much of a factor as I expected this season. So, I agree. They would. You know, do you go back to defensive line in the second round next year to find another guy to be part of the rotation? Because you look at the best teams in the NFL, and it all seems like they're running 7 or 8 players through there. Even when you have really quality players like Geno Atkins or Aaron Donald or whomever it may be, you don't see guys playing, you know, more than 60-70% of the snaps.
Yeah. Where is this defense at overall? I mean, with the talent they have right now, how many players are they short of having a defense that can
compete?
And you're not including Bud Dupree or Cinquez Golson in that, right?
Well, Bud Dupree might be one of those guys. Well, I'm not including Cinquez Golson for sure, but you know, Bud Dupree could be one of those guys. You get a dominant, you know, another kind of if he develops into one, then you hope to find another you know, really good edge rusher, and then another guy along the D line who can help him out. I mean, I don't think the problem is today, and I know, you know, I think with Artie Burns and Sean Davis, I've seen enough to think that these guys are going to be decent NFL players. Mitchell can play in the secondary. Cockrell can play in the secondary. Look, you're dealing with rookies, so if they continue to progress like you would hope they do, I think those guys will be fine.
My jury's still pretty much out on both Burns and Sean Davis. I would lean more to Sean Davis having more kind of confidence in upside right now than I do Artie Burns. In defense of Artie Burns, as Kevin Colbert likes to say, this is his senior year. Not only was he an underclassman in Raw, he missed a lot of the off-season time at Miami due to track, yada yada, all that type stuff. I'm not convinced those two guys are players and guys that we're debating at the end of a season in the future. Boy, those guys got snubbed from the Pro Bowl. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Here's what I wrote after the game. The Steelers, all the Steelers outside linebackers would be backups on other NFL teams. Agree or disagree?
All the Steelers outside linebackers, yeah, you know, they wouldn't be on some teams. I mean, absolutely. None of those guys are – I mean, Arthur Motes isn't even getting time now, you know, for the Steelers. You know, look, Chickalo's shown some progress. I'm not going to – you know, I've said many times he's just a guy. He's made he's made some impactful plays. He did yesterday, but he's not going to start for most NFL teams. Jarvis, you know, the Steelers aren't looking to bring him back. And James Harrison's a situational guy who can be useful. That's not a knock on James at, you know, at 3,700 years old. It's impressive what he's done. But, you know, ideally, you just want him to play 25 snaps a game.
Let me ask you about the secondary as well, too. If we're going to go into the hypothetical world here, and don't tell me you don't deal in hypotheticals. If you were another NFL team and I said, look, you could have any player in the Steelers secondary for the final 7 games, and there'll be no cap repercussions whatsoever, but you don't get to keep the guy after 7 games, after the regular season. But you can have any pick of any guy, but the stipulation is he has to go straight into your starting lineup and has to play.
Any guy in the NFL? Huh? Any guy in the NFL?
No. The Steelers. Any team in the NFL. And I gave you the choice of any guy in the Steelers secondary with those stipulations attached to it. Is there?
Oh, if I'm the New England Patriots, which Steeler defensive back would I take?
Right.
Well, that's easy. Just because the damage would be least with Mike Mitchell, but and he's the most experienced, so he'd be the guy, you know, for 7 games. Who I would think, you know, I could play in a couple different roles and have him be. He was not uneventful yesterday, but I think if I'm a team and I'm looking for, I mean, you know, I might also take Ross Cockrell, if I needed corner help, but the least damage comes from Mitchell. I think Cockrell, if you have a need, Cockrell could help you. I think Cockrell's been pretty good.
So you're taking Mitchell because he causes the least amount of
yes. Some amount of damage.
He sucks less or whatever, huh? But I don't know. The last couple of weeks with these angles and stiff arms and stuff along that, how long would he last in Belichick world?
I don't know. All good
questions.
As
much as we hate Belichick, he's not afraid to bring somebody in. He's not afraid to ship somebody out, is he?
He is not afraid to move guys around.
He is married to nobody except one guy named Tom Brady, and I think that's about it when it comes to that. Either you play well or you're out of here type of thing. I suppose we have to get to this 2-point talk real quick and some of Ben's comments.
Okay, so here's my answer on this. The whole conversation centers around one thing, the second touchdown. I think everybody understands in the third touchdown when you're up one and the fourth touchdown when you're up one, it doesn't make any sense to kick the extra point. So the last four touchdowns of the game, both teams went for two and none of them converted. So we can pretty much dismiss that from the conversation, right?
Yeah. I mean, their identity all year is, if they get on top first.
I'm just saying that all the touchdowns late in the game when they were up one and went for two and both teams had the same situation, that's not what we're talking about.
Right. Throw that one out. Yeah.
Everybody understands.
Absolutely.
So it's only about the second touchdown. Because, when you have a team that goes 8-for-11 last year and 2-for-2 this year.
And four for two back in the year before that.
Okay, so is that right? So they've been unbelievably good at it. And basically what you want to look at, if you want to get on the analytics side of this thing, is you want to look at points expectancy. And what you take is if you think the Steelers are two out of three times they're going to convert, you take 0.66 times two, and you're going to come up with a number, whatever that is, like 1.25, whatever the exact number is, two-thirds of two. So I should be able to do that in my head a little better than I just did. But so you come up with that, and that's your value. And then you take your value from an expected extra point, which is they'll miss occasionally. Let's call it, 97%. So that's 0.97. So you make an argument, basically every time the Steelers should go for two if they could make it two-thirds of the time. And over the past couple of years, they've made it more than two-thirds of the time. So now I understand why some people don't, think that that's the appropriate thing every time. But so the argument behind the numbers is that that's the argument. So they go for it this time and they don't get the two. And then they score again. So now it's 12-3 because the Cowboys have kicked the field goal. And now people want to make the decision. They want to make the decision, not whether they think the Steelers are going to score or not. They want to make the decision in the first quarter based on the fact that the Cowboys had 3 points. Now, if the Cowboys had 7 points, would the Steelers, would you have wanted them to go for two so they could get ahead by seven? Because six, five and six isn't that different. But if they had been ahead by two, by five, would you wanted them to go for two? So basically what you're doing is in the first quarter, you're watching the scoreboard to make your decision. Now, I get it. I want them to go for two every time they score in the first half, regardless of what the scoreboard says. That's because to me, you're not playing, the other team's score. You're playing your likelihood of putting more points up. So that's my simple argument for why they should do it. Now, I understand why the other side of the argument. I'm not going to say the other side of the argument's wrong, but that's my point, Dave.
Yeah, and I think the only one you really have to question there is the second one. Do you want to go up at that point 13 to what would have been 3, right?
3, yeah.
That's the only one that I really think is in question, but they've had success, right? I mean, they've had success. So it's something that they practice all during, that's all we heard during the OTA practices, right from the get-go, working on going for two, ball at the 2-yard line, that kind of stuff. And, over the course of the last 3 years as a whole, they've been successful at it. So, that's not what lost them this game, obviously. But I can understand the frustration with going for it on the second one. But that's the only time that I can see. And that second one was in the first quarter, though. There's a lot of football left to be played. And, does getting it or not getting it change what's going to transpire after that? I mean, that's the least of my worries right now, is Tomlin deciding to go for two all four times, you know, four times in this game. That's the absolute least of my worries.
I'm with you. And it's just, you know, when are they going to get 60 minutes from both sides of the ball? They did against Kansas City, and I'm not sure there's been another game where they have.
What did you think about Ben's comments after the game?
Terse. You know, here's the thing. Here's what people throw around words. And, you know, we had Aditi's comments before the game. And, like, Mike, you know, Ben had a heart-to-heart with Mike about, you know, urgency of getting guys, you know, accountable. People keep throwing around the word accountable, and, you know, I get the sense of urgency. You lose three games and now four games in a row, you better have a sense of urgency. But, I, you know, more attention to detail, blah, blah, blah. You know, Ben talking about, you know, young guys this, young guys that. Well, I don't – what does accountable mean? What is it every guy do what he's supposed to do, you know, do your job, as Bill Belichick said. To me, that's what accountable is. The Steelers, you know, they don't have necessarily a lot of depth to change players out. I don't know, you know, all this talk about Mike Tomlin, I don't know what people, what the argument here is when, you know, Sean Davis commits a face mask penalty that may or may not have decided the game. What do people want Mike Tomlin to do about that? Do you bench Sean Davis? You know, and retard his growth and you know, not have him in the next week because he committed a face mask penalty? That was a huge play.
And if you do that, you got to bench Ross Cockrell for the 15-yarder on the previous drive and hitting the guy out of bounds, right? So there's
And the week before, you have Antonio Brown covering up a receiver. You have David DeCastro with a couple false starts and a holding penalty. I mean, again, accountability is a great word to throw out there. Now tell me what it means and how you want it implemented.
Ben Roethlisberger says, we need to be more disciplined and more accountable. He goes on later on in his post-game presser to use the words disciplined and accountable a few more times, obviously sending a message because he kept repeating those words. When finally pushed on it and says, how do you get there? Roethlisberger says, I don't know. Is it players? Is it coaches? I don't know, but we need to get there quick. Now, You could parse that and end it right there and think, okay, maybe he's talking about both sides of the football, the whole team. But later on, he was asked about young players like Kobe Hamilton, Eli Rogers, Ladarius Green, and he made sure to praise the play of all three of those players. So who else would he – I mean, he's not going to throw his offensive line underneath the bus, right? They only committed – they only had one charge penalty against them. He's not going to toss you know, and say he's not accountable or more disciplined. He's not going to say that Le'Veon Bell's not accountable and more disciplined. So who is he talking about? He's talking about the defensive side of the ball and the defensive coaches. I mean, it's
or he's talking – and Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates.
No, he defended Eli Rogers, too. He went
– Well, okay. It was just before the game or after the game?
After the game.
Yeah, okay. So before the game, I thought his whole thing about guys – I thought it was Eli, because he said somewhat the same thing apparently during the course of the week. And during the course of the week, obviously it's the defense who did their job last week, and I assumed that was focused on you know, Sammy Coates. It was focused on the young receivers, because as you say, it's not the O-line, it's not Bell, it's not AB.
Right. So I mean, and what I'm talking about obviously is the quotes after the game. He was asked about the young players on offense. He said he thought Kobe Hamilton and Eli Rogers did a great job of stepping up and making catches in this game, and he thought Ladarius Green had a good debut as well too. So that was his opportunity to say those are the guys that need to be more disciplined and accountable, and he didn't. So that Roethlisberger was not talking about anybody on the offense being more disciplined and accountable, I don't think. So he's obviously talking about a defense, and then later on, you know, when he took that shot and talked about what he was asked. You had to feel pretty good with, you know, scoring with 42 seconds left on the clock. And he said something to the effect, yeah, it feels pretty good, but I guess we left too much time. And he said it with a smirk. So so we're going to hear these sound bites all throughout the week about Roethlisberger firing a shot at defense. And that's exactly how I wrote up the title, you know, as far as Ben Roethlisberger's comments after the game. But you're right. We have not seen a outside of maybe the Chiefs game, right? We have not seen a Ben is good defense is good as well too. We haven't seen that type of game, and I'm not sure we're going to get one of those this year. And I think this defense is just you said what, three players away from being a top 10 defense per se. Silly me, I thought maybe they had that on the roster this year. They don't. This team is at least.
Bud Dupree coming in with the Superman cape.
I'm not seeing it. You know, do you think he's gonna? I mean, is he from what you've seen, and dating back to his time at Kentucky, is he a double digit sack guy? And I'm not ready to say he is.
Well, I'm certainly not ready to say yes. I just say, you know, Steeler fans' prayers.
I mean, Chickalo, for all his warts right now, at least he's getting after the passer a little bit there on the left side. You know, we're run out of time. I jabbered a lot, way too long on this one, but I want to discuss in this next podcast, David, on Wednesday, running back position and whether or not it's, you know, how fungible the running back position is. And I know I think you know which way I'm going to go on this, you know, going into this. So don't let me forget about talking about just how fungible, because in so many words, what I'm trying to say is, do the Steelers need to spend money on defense during the offseason? And where does that money need to come from?
Again, well, they're going to get a free $15 million from Lawrence Timmons, so you can kiss him goodbye and start there.
Yeah, but I mean that $15 million goes right back out the window again if you have to give it on a franchise tag to Bell. You know, not the full $15 million, but you know, a good portion, sure, has to go to Bell, and that's kind of where I want to go with this conversation on Wednesday. I think you can kind of read in between the lines there.
All right. Well, you know, remember, look, go buy a house. Do that. Do yourself a favor. If you're feeling bad today, go buy your dream home. You know, go get a vacation home, or at least upgrade, or whatever, downsize, refinance, whatever. But call our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right.
Are you firing Tomlin?
Yeah, I called today for Mike Tomlin's firing on Twitter, and you know, made sure everybody got a piece of that. My God, I mean, I'll tell you, I should know better. I should take your lead, but just the nonsense I got. Today I got called a shill for the logo, a complete Ben hater. Then it was like I got asked why I don't support the Steelers more. You know, it's just some of the nonsensical stuff on Twitter. I should really learn to ignore it, but sometimes, some mornings, you know, I go in for the battle and I still come out.
I've gotten better over you know, the last 3 months, I think, David. I used to respond to all that stuff with real smart alecky comments. Now I let it fill my timeline now. I don't respond to half of it. Look, I understand instant reactions and all like that, but for all the doom and gloom that I've had to say about this Steelers team, you know, right now, especially the defense, I think this is still a team that can potentially make the playoffs. Call me crazy. Now, do I think they're going to go far in the playoffs? No, but the shape of the AFC North is a mess right now. You get Cleveland next week. Yeah, things can happen. We saw what happened last year. They get a gift from Buffalo in the game against the Jets, and they get into the playoffs. I still think this is a team that can make the playoffs. They're 4-5. They've lost four straight. That's not good. No, there's problems. Inconsistent. They haven't put a full game together on both sides of the ball, really, so to speak. But I still think this is a team that can maybe make the playoffs. So firing a coach right now is not going to improve what happens the rest of the season with the talent that's on this football team. So you might as well sit back and grab a bucket of popcorn. Let's just see how this thing plays out. And we'll talk about it every week, and we'll talk more about it after the season finally comes to an end. But boy, I feel like we've missed so much today. I don't know why. Need a 3-hour podcast today for my babbling. You can follow me on Twitter.
Well,
follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what shills we are and all like that. And if you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com, find a donate button in the navigational bar. Don't let me forget to talk about Bell on Wednesday. David, have a good day.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.